This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're actually going to give credence to the statement that you're really just a fathead. That actually turns out to be a compliment, according to today's guest. He's Tom Naughton. He's written a very, very interesting book, and he's also got some movies entitled Fathead. His latest is Fathead for Kids, which is an important initiative because that's where it starts. We've got a childhood epidemic of obesity and adolescent diabetes to contend with, and that portends very poorly for a medical system. Tom is an edutainer. He's out there on the hustings getting the word out about diet. He has personal experience with diet that he'll share with us today. And so, welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's a pleasure having you on, Tom.
It's a pleasure to be back.
Yes, indeed. You graced our airwaves, I believe it was in November of 2015, and that's when you originally launched Fathead. So tell us what you've been up to.
Well, after Fathead finally found a wide audience, especially on Netflix, where a whole lot of people saw it because over 250,000 people left a star rating. And from what I'm told, most people don't leave star ratings. So that indicates a pretty good audience size. Anyway, after it went to Netflix, surprisingly, I started hearing from parents telling me how much their kids enjoyed Fathead. We didn't really make it for kids, although it did have some cartoony, fun, humorous stuff in there. So I guess it kind of appealed to a lot more kids than I had expected. And after we started getting these nice emails from parents, my wife and I were kicking around ideas. What do we want to do next? And we ultimately decided, you know, maybe we should just do our next project specifically targeted at kids. So we did. We came up with the book, which finally just came out. It's called Fathead Kids. The subtitle is Stuff About Diet and Health I Wish I Knew When I Was Your Age. And it's just out and doing well, and now I'm going a little nutty trying to get a film version done.
Oh, wow, great. So when you message kids, you know, you got to be careful because we don't want to induce a kind of self-consciousness that leads kids to become overly fastidious with diet because mm-hmm. that inevitably backfires. I mean, there actually been studies which look at moms who are overprotective of kids when it comes to messaging kids about, oh, you know, you're chubby or you're overweight. This can ultimately backfire. So how do you get around that in providing a message that is a good take-home message but also a wholesome message?
You know, I had the advantage, if you want to call it that, of having been a fat kid myself. So I think I had a pretty good insight going into it, what not to say to kids. Shaming doesn't work. Telling them they're too fat doesn't work. What you can do is explain to them in a way that they understand that there are certain foods that are more likely to kick your body into get fat mode. And there are certain foods that are more likely to keep you feeling energetic and lean and not hungry when you shouldn't be hungry so you don't overeat. And as to the point of, we're actually very careful about, we don't want to raise kids who are afraid to eat anything. We don't want to be food Nazis. Mm-hmm. The last chapter in the book is actually called It's Perfectly Good to Be Good Instead of Perfect. Because I'm a big believer in, if you tell everybody the only way to be healthy is to eat an absolutely perfect diet, then you've set the bar so high, most people won't even try to jump over it.
Right. There was once an expression, there was a little girl who was very, very good when she was good. And when she was bad, she was very, very bad. So what we're trying to avoid is this dualistic behavior of people on perfectionistic diets. And they're so boring and monotonous and rigid that they then, go to the opposite extreme and binge out and then end up yo-yo dieting, which we know is very harmful.
And I think that's a real concern. And, the other thing we need to keep in mind is, yes, we have way too many kids these days who are overweight, who have type 2 diabetes. I mean, my God, kids should not have type 2 diabetes. It's insane. But one thing we need to keep in mind is back, when I was a kid, or if you go back even earlier, when we had very few overweight kids and when we didn't have kids coming down with type 2 diabetes, were they on perfect diets? Of course not. They were on better diets.
Yeah. How do you think the landscape has changed in the past a few generations, maybe just since 1945, the post-war era? When clearly kids ate cake and they ate some candy and, occasionally there was such a thing as Coca-Cola. What's the difference? Why is there, an upsurge in the, incidence of obesity and diabetes?
Well, and I'm sure you're very aware of this, but I think what's really changed is, it's a couple of things. One, foods that, if you can even call them foods that used to be considered treats. Back in the day, people understood those were treats. And now we've taken the same ingredients, the flours and the sugars, and we've told people it's actually food. We've put them in boxes of cereal that have the American Heart Association stamp of approval on them.
Right.
Which is just insane. And so I think the difference is kids have been fed, not just kids, but kids and adults have been told, eat your grains. And eat low fat. And then moms go to the grocery store. And we've mentioned this in the book. We ran into a woman at the grocery store whose son was in the same class as our daughter in school. And she was telling us, oh, my son's getting fat. I'm trying to make him eat better. I'm going to make him play outdoors more. So I took a peek into her grocery cart. I saw pasta. I saw cereal, heart healthy whole grain cereals. I saw apple juice, I saw skinless chicken breasts, everything was low-fat something, and I'm thinking, there's no way this kid's going to lose weight eating this diet. I think the difference is our understanding of which foods make you fat and which foods don't changed, and it changed in the wrong direction.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen. New True Niagen Pro contains a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, which is a vital resource used every day to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. NAD is critical for energy and cellular repair and supports muscle function. But as we age, NAD has been found to decline up to 50%. True Niagen Pro is clinically proven to safely increase NAD levels, caring for your cells to help you age better and live better. True Niagen Pro is only available through healthcare practitioners. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com to get yours.
Tom, are you aware there was recently a big brouhaha about a study that they unearthed somewhere in a university basement, which was a study done 40 years ago that was deep-sixed ultimately vindicated saturated fats, but due to politics, due to the prevailing nutritional dogma, was withheld. And it's only now that studies like this are coming to light. They just seem, the science was there, but the politics of nutrition kept these ideas under wraps.
There were two of those, in fact. One was done in Sydney, Australia, I guess. That got deep-sixed. The data was just, I love this, rediscovered, meaning wraps were taken off of it. And that one was one where they substituted vegetable oil for saturated fat. The vegetable oil group actually had a higher rate of heart attacks than the group that was left on their normal diet.
Which, by the way, continues to be the current recommendation of the American Heart Association. You go to their website, they say, reduce, you know, don't eat as much dairy, make sure you have low-fat dairy, and substitute vegetable oil for butter. They still tell you that. And that is anachronistic advice at best.
I think it's going to take them forever to back away from that advice. Probably when everyone who was ever involved in coming up with that advice in the first place is, you know, finally dead and buried.
But maybe what it takes.
So the one you might have been, I don't know which of the two that was rediscovered you were referring to. There was one in Sydney. There was one conducted in Minnesota, and it turns out the scientist who gathered the results and buried it was our old buddy Ansel Keys. And we all know he was, he had decided first what the answer was and then went looking for the evidence to support his theory. And if the evidence didn't support his theory, he wasn't interested in the evidence. Mm-hmm. So that's unfortunately part of what's led us to where we are.
It sounds like you personally have benefited from a diet change. Can you dish for us a little bit on your own personal background?
Sure. I was a skinny kid, very skinny kid, skinny, weak kid. And then around adolescence, suddenly I started getting fat, and I don't think I had any radical shift in diet at the time, although this was in the 70s, late 60s, early 70s, and the idea that fat, that animal fat was bad for you was becoming more and more accepted. I do remember my dad was diagnosed with high cholesterol, and I think at that point my mom accepted the prevailing advice and cut more of the animal fats out of our diets. I remember us eating some kind of soy ham. And and I remember her switching to egg beaters. But I think the big shift for me was, you know, eating more cereal. But I had been eating cereal as a kid. I don't know how much more I started eating. I think maybe part of what happened to me was just the diet finally caught up with me. And of course, when kids go into puberty and their hormones get a little wacky, that's when a bad diet can be a particularly big threat. Mm-hmm. But in any case, I suddenly kind of blew up into one of these kids, rare at the time. I see more of them now, with the skinny arms and legs, but I had the fat belly and I had the boy boobs. Hmm. And it turned me from a skinny, weak kid into a fat, weak, slow kid. And I then, like a lot of fat people, you know, I spent a lot of times, as I recount in the opening chapter for kids, so that they understand I've been through what they're going through.
You've been there, done that.
And I tried all the different diets, tried running it off, joined gyms, tried low-fat diets, tried low-calorie diets, pretty much failed time after time until I was almost 50 years old and I finally got on a diet that works. And now I'm leaner, stronger, more energetic than I was, you know, when I was 25, and I'm 58 now.
Mm-hmm. And that essentially is a paleo-style diet. In other words, you're not having virtually any grains. You're not having dairy. You're not having modern foods. Is that how it works for you?
I do eat dairy. I don't eat a whole lot of it. You know, like we said, we don't want to tell people you have to be on a perfect diet. Mm-hmm. So the way I break it down in the book is start out by doing three important things. Cut the sugar out of your diet. Cut the grains out of your diet. Cut the industrial vegetable oils out of your diet. If you do those three things, you've cut out the three biggest triggers.
Mm, yeah.
After that, you can start aiming for perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, for me, that's what it gets down to.
So some of your messaging is about pushing back against the prevailing myth that physical activity is the key to weight optimization, which is, I think, something that soft drink manufacturers and food manufacturers tend to promote. They say, look, you can have some treats as part of a healthy lifestyle as long as you're physically active. And then, of course, they manage to co-opt the previous First Lady to get behind a let's move movement to counteract obesity rather than focusing on the quality of foods.
Yeah, and, you know, don't get me wrong. I think exercise is great, but and I want kids to be active. But here's the thing. If kids are on a good diet, you really don't have to encourage them to be active. We've got the equation backwards. The soft drink companies and a lot of other people with vested interests want us to think, well, the problem is kids don't move around as much, so they're getting fat. It's backwards. The research shows that kids start getting fat first. Mm-hmm. Then they become less active. They become less active for the same reason they're getting fat, which is the energy is being sucked into their fat cells. Well, if your energy's flowing through your bloodstream and you're bouncy and energetic like kids are supposed to be, you don't have to be told to go play outside. When I was a kid, our moms had to yell at us to come back inside.
Hey, would you like fries with that?
Yeah.
Sorry about
that. I think I hear Fathead in the background.
Exactly. That's I was just queuing that up. I was going to ask you.
Well, no, what's funny was that's my wife delivering that line.
Interesting.
And I thought, why is she talking to me? She knows I'm doing a podcast right now. And then I realized, no, that's from Fathead.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah. Well, that's actually an excerpt because you talk a little bit about
Let me have a large.
Stop.
Here it is.
Tempting this innocent man with your fatty food.
Okay, so that's actually an excerpt from one of your excellent. It's actually it's a cartoon,
right.
Which you know gets the word across. So recently you talk about Tim Noakes, a guy in mm-hmm. South Africa, who incredibly in this era of. Scientific truth was brought up on charges because he advocated the kind of diet that you talk about.
Right. It's absolutely insane. There's no logic to their case. I think what they realized when they wanted to bring him up on charges, first off, the people who brought him up are the, I don't remember the organization they belong to. They're kind of like the South African version of our, you know, American Academy of Dietetics and Dietitians, something like that, some official organization, who, of course, have a lot of support from Big Food. And all that happened was a mother asked him on Twitter, you know, what kind of diet she should be on while breastfeeding and what's good for the baby. And he told her you want to be on a low-carb, high-fat diet, and that's a good diet for you to wean your baby onto. I think they realized maybe they were on shaky ground bringing charges against the guy for recommending a low-carb, high-fat diet. So instead, they brought him up on charges of unprofessional conduct, supposedly mm-hmm. because he was giving dietary advice without a proper consultation.
Wow.
Now, I've gone to Twitter, and I've looked at the number of doctors.
Right.
And the American Heart Association, and you name it up and down the line, who give dietary advice on Twitter, and I don't think any of them are sitting down first and having a proper consultation.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nonsense from the beginning, and you and I both know if he had responded to that mother by saying, make sure you wean your kid onto healthy whole grains, there would have been no charges brought. So basically, this was a witch hunt going after a guy because mm-hmm. he recommended a diet that they don't like.
I think there are probably some people in the nutrition establishment who believe that you can do a baby irreparable harm if you don't consume a lot of carbohydrates. I mean, I actually mm-hmm. do still think that that view prevails. So they may say, oh, my goodness, you know, the baby might suffer brain damage, you know, like some of the couples who rear a child on a macrobiotic diet, giving them rice milk instead of whole milk or breast milk and seaweed as an infant food, you know, where you can actually create harm. They may still believe that you know, some people still ask me, Tom, don't you need carbohydrates? You need a certain number of carbohydrates in your daily diet, just like a minimum daily requirement.
Yeah, the people who think that we're going to damage a kid's brain if we, you know, cut the grains and the sugars, well, they probably don't mind the sugars, cut the grains out of their diets. I want them to come meet my daughters, you know, the straight A students, the older ones in the gifted program at school. Somehow her brain managed to reach, you know, full potential without eating Cheerios. So this idea that kids are going to be harmed, they're not going to be intelligent, they're not going to be healthy. It's how do you think the buffalo hunting tribes managed to have big, strong children? I mean, this whole idea that human beings can only thrive on foods that we didn't eat for 99% of our existence is just insane. I mean, it's one of the things we certainly talk about in the book, which we try to keep light and fun and amusing. I honestly don't know where these people I don't know how they can think that's even logical. I know that's how they were trained. All you have to do is look back at human history and go, somehow humans managed to thrive without Cheerios, without heart-healthy whole grains.
And I think that there is some messaging behind the word fathead that you use to designate your two efforts, Fathead, the original movie and book, and then Fathead for Kids, because fat has a role in promoting brain health. Isn't that part of your mission statement there?
Absolutely. And it's one of the things we pointed out in Fathead. It's one of the things we point out in the book. You know, your brain is made mostly of fat. 25% of the cholesterol in your body is in your brain. It's there for a reason. And it was kind of funny when I was producing Fathead, I still had not decided what to call it until I was going through the footage and putting clips together. And one of the people I interviewed, Mary Dan Eads, said, you know, explained your brain is mostly fat. She said, when they call you a fathead, they're not kidding. And suddenly it hit me. That's it. That's what we're going to call it. It's Fathead. And since then, because we have a large following online, people started referring to themselves as fatheads. So I've grown to really like the term.
Well, great. Good introduction. In part two, our listeners know that we divide our podcast into two parts. I want you to share some more insights that you provide to your listeners and people who follow your blogs. And when we return, Tom Naughton, the author and director of Fathead. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.